Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing how meta is too meta, if fans really are the problem. Netflix is trying to gouge us again. Fantastic Beasts 3, our topic this week is why do we so love revenge? Plus a whole lot more. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink, I think, is finally here again.
Hello.
She lives.
I live.
And Troy Heinrichs is here as well.
I will find you, and I will kill you.
Jesus. I think he just threatened you, Amanda. Do you want me to call the authorities? Because I will.
He just missed me. It's okay.
I did. It's been like a year.
I know.
It has been a minute. Other than South By, other than that episode, it's been a minute. I do want to bring up some. Actually, Troy, you brought this up before we started, that Netflix is now saying, here's what happened. So they lost 200,000 subscribers, right, in Q1. And they're forecasting, I think, 2 million subscribers they're going to lose in Q2. So they're already experimenting with getting rid of password sharing. You know, anybody that lives outside of the house, they can't share passwords anymore, which I find fascinating because a few years ago they said, do that. They like advocated that you do that. And now if I'm realizing it correctly, they are also saying that they're going to look at an ad-supported tier, right? To lower the price a little bit for some consumers. Am I reading that right? Hearing that right?
That is how I read it as well.
Well, first off, let's start with the password sharing. What do we feel about the whole idea that Netflix is not going to allow you to share passwords anymore? Which means if you're not in the house, theoretically, they haven't done it yet, but they're looking at it. How do you feel about that?
I mean, this is the hard part because I've always felt if you give me the ability to have 5 accounts, then I can make 5 accounts. Even though you're supposed to technically do them for the people in your house. But even the people in my house aren't going to use 5 accounts. Like, I'm not making an account for both kids to have their own thing when they're under 10 years old. So if I have the ability to have 5 accounts, I can use 5 accounts. Like, Microsoft is a great example. So, like, you can buy Microsoft Office online and you get 5 licenses. And I could share that with anybody. It doesn't have to be within my house. So the precedent's been set that I could share it outside of my house. So why do they care about it being inside the house? Like, maybe it's different because it's software versus entertainment and there's different restrictions or whatever on the content and copyright and whatnot.
It's totally a money issue. It's because they're losing money. Because they don't have any way to grow outside of this.
I want to know how they're going to monitor and manage this.
IP addresses.
Because if I... But are they going to look at every single person's IP address and be like, oh, this doesn't match here. What if I'm traveling? Or what if my household member is traveling?
I think they actually show up at your house. And they do an on-site consensus and also a kind of a proctological exam. I'm sorry, but that's how they have to do it now. It's like a DNA. They do a very thorough check to make sure you are who you say you are. I think that's how they do it. I don't have any scientific proof of that, but that is the internet now.
You seem to sure know a whole lot about the experience of proctal investigations.
Yeah, that guy wasn't from Netflix.
John's like, I know because it happened to me.
I got his number. What are you talking about? That was the most caring experience I've had in a year.
Yeah.
John's like, it was so sensitive and sensual. It's what I needed.
He held me just the right way. I just like, I haven't been held in like that in a long time.
No, I think IP addresses, but I don't know exactly. Maybe it's like limited to devices or something. They can do that. I don't know how you do it, but that is what they're looking at.
It is the gateway, though, for like a Nielsen box to come back into the fold somehow.
A Nielsen? The real ratings box?
Yeah. Like, you could put that box in there because then they can monitor you remotely and see like who's been accessing it and what accounts are accessing which boxes.
You start monitoring me and I'm out.
Yeah, if you're going to be doing all that Big Brother stuff, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I'm good. I've got enough monitoring going on.
Yeah, I've accepted enough terms and conditions. I think I'm good.
I'm gonna start reading those terms and conditions.
It's already something that they can do. Not really just Netflix, but in general, subscription services can monitor which devices you have things installed on, whatever you reach things through for. Mm-hmm. Take Microsoft for example; they know exactly which devices you're logging in through, and so if they allow you to have 5 licenses, those 5 licenses. They're tracking where those 5 licenses are being used. So there's not necessarily that difficult on that end, but on the other end, it is an IP issue thing. But what I find really difficult that they're trying to do is how are they going to do it when there is family and one kid goes to college, or they're not going to let that kid who went to college be able to use the rest of the family's Netflix account. Like, that seems a little ridiculous.
According to the Affordable Care Act, because this is needs to be affordable for everybody, they have till 26 before they have to get off the Netflix account.
I like that. What's the ages of everyone?
Right.
But I, you know, John, it reminds me of Adobe. So you and I both have Adobe Creative Cloud, and they allow you like 3 devices that you can connect your account to. Mm-hmm. And you have to remove a device to be able to add a device. That's fine. I'm fine with that. Like, if you just limit me on, you know, you can only have so many devices signed in at one time. Because guess what? If somebody tries to mess with me, I'm just going to kick you out of your account. And then you can't get in, and I'm going to get in. I won't be limited because I'm the one paying for it. So I'm fine.
Mm. So you have your own Adobe account now?
I do. I've had it for a long time because I get student pricing.
I use yours. You know what? Just a segue. Do you know what Adobe and Warner Brothers have in common? They're both in search of a new Flash.
We're exiting. This is the end of the podcast. Goodbye.
Did you send him that?
That was not mine. For those that don't know, we had a pretty awesome bonus Patreon episode. So make sure you sign up for Patreon to hear that, where I won the joke contest 10-0 to Aaron.
You see that 7.
That's carried over
now it's 10.
To this episode.
I don't even know what happened. All right. So what do you think about the ad-supported tier? I actually don't have a problem with that. If people want
all the other ones have it.
So. Yeah, all the other ones have it. If it lowers the price for people that want to save some money, and Netflix has the highest price of all the streaming services right now.
More importantly, it has to lower everybody's price, because if you bring in an ad-supported tier, your money should be paying for the other tiers. Therefore, the other tiers can come back in line where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like $15 for Ultra HD 4 streams, I think, is like the max. You creep over $15, we got issues.
$15, right. Little man.
Isn't
put
it
that shit in my
in
hand.
In my hand. If that money doesn't show, then you owe me, yo, me, yo. My jungle.
Oh, yo, yo.
I think I want to know. Hey,
we don't need to pay royalties.
Yeah.
Hey,
what?
Hey, stop with the actual movie
stuff. You
stops.
Started it.
Who sings that song?
I don't know.
Jay and Silent Bob.
Jay and Silent Bob.
Why don't you let him sing it then?
Well, that'll be interesting to see what Netflix does here, because, I mean, they're obviously trying to grow some revenue, and that's how they're going to do it, since they can't really add subscribers in their mind, because COVID is over, or essentially, I mean, in terms of people being remote a lot.
I know exactly how they can grow revenue, Aaron.
Oh, boy.
New business plan for Netflix. You ready?
I'm ready.
Stop sending Blacklist a check.
I think they have a contract. I don't think they have a choice, right? Like, they just have to do it. I mean, if they're watching the show, they probably don't want to send a check anymore, but they just have to. Sorry, that wasn't very nice.
Burn!
Okay, moving on. Discovery has closed its $43 billion deal for Warner Brothers, and in addition to a combined Discovery/HBO Max app that's going to be coming, it's now exploring ways to overhaul DC Entertainment, including possibly finding their own Kevin Feige like mind to shepherd the works into a solidified brand. And they just got some more bad news, because Ezra Miller got arrested yet again. I can't imagine that they're not going to immediately start with recasting Flash. I mean, right? Just like get on that. Get this.
Or like doing some sort of personality check on all of their talent. Like, how inclined
something.
Are you to get arrested in the public eye and then do it again a week later?
In the same place. That's just wild. So if you didn't know, he got arrested in Hawaii like twice in the last couple of weeks. And it's for like assault and all this other stuff. It's just
hit a woman with a chair this time or something.
I mean,
just a mess.
It's
that Flash,
loved him.
That Flash and the Fantastic Beast money is really getting to his head, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like you're not even a star yet. What are you doing? But anyway, so what do we think should be DC's direction here? I think we can all agree that the Flash movie has a multiverse recast at the end. Throw Grant Gustin in there or something, and just boom. Let's get a new Flash. I don't know. Reshoot the whole his. I don't think he can. That's too expensive. But, you know, have a different ending. But what do we think should be DC's direction here in terms of overhauling DC Entertainment? Bring Zack Snyder back? Sorry.
Let it sit.
Don't tempt me. Don't you tempt me with that. I will agree. I will sign off on that pretty wholeheartedly.
Anyway, what else? We're not doing that. We're not restoring the Snyderverse. So what else should they do?
I think you should let it sit. I think you should just not do anything DC for a couple of years, and then scarcity is what will actually rebirth the interest in the DC era. Because the fact that, you know, we just had the brand new Batman movie, the fact that Joker did so well, like that's the direction they should be going, is movies like the Joker and movies like the new Batman, because those fit the style, I think, of what should be coming down the pipe. You just need someone to plan in the other kind of not so dark and serious type villain and heroes and figure out how to work Aquaman and the Flash into something like that, where it would be more dark yet humorous at the same time.
I would love the idea of some Kevin Feige type person coming in and taking the lead. Definitely not, what is it, Kathleen Miller? What is her name again?
Kathleen Kennedy.
Kathleen
Star
Kennedy.
Wars. Kathleen yeah. Kennedy yeah. for Star Wars.
She's busy.
Definitely not that kind of person, but definitely a Kevin Feige person who has the ability of finding the right talent to build these stories and then decide what the pace of the overall or overarching voice of DC movies should be. Should they be able to do something that's a Infinite Crisis kind of idea, where they're dealing with different worlds within a multiverse? That could be fun. I would like to see a grounded central world. Then some of these multiverse ideas come out. I hesitate to say that I would love to see the Snyderverse be the center of that, because I think the Snyderverse has a lot of potential with the DC overarching concept of what DC does very well, which is gods versus monsters, as opposed to what Marvel does very well, which is the guy next door becoming a hero. So I want to see a lot of that sort of difference between the two universes.
Well, I just want to this is a safe space, just so you know. Mm-hmm. He's not coming back. I don't think they're even going to let Zack Snyder back on the lot at this point. I mean, I think if he showed up, they'd be like, come back after dark when nobody's here.
Why?
They went through a lot of hell with that whole world, and I feel like they just want to move on. That seems pretty obvious in every decision they've made since the Snyder cut. You know what I mean? I like an idea of a single mind to shepherd it. And I thought, what about Jason Blum?
Ooh.
What about somebody who has taken, you know, multiple worlds and created universes and whatnot? He's done, you know, he's done a lot of different molding of minds and rising up of talent, you know, shepherding young creative visions into something low budget with great return. Put him in charge of, like, maybe even in the smaller branches, not the big main characters, but a smaller universe function and just kind of smaller, more independent style movies where lower budgets, lesser known superheroes, and kind of create a world and build it up from there. Cause then less risk, right? Less risk. You're not spending a fortune, but on the same token, you have someone who knows how to find good talent and can really, you know, he's worked with monsters, so you want gods and monsters, there you go. You know, he's worked with monsters, now he just got to work with a few gods.
Aaron, why do you not have a job offer from Warner Brothers?
They don't know who Aaron is.
Yeah, they don't, actually. They don't. If I start humming the Harry Potter theme song, then suddenly they'll know who I am.
Yeah,
when they serve me.
Never mind, I'm going to stop right there.
I like the idea of having one person shepherding it, too. I also just want somebody, to John's point, that isn't like Kathleen Kennedy and has actually read all of the comics. I think that's useful before you get into developing a world and creating that strategy of what you're going to do. Can we also just have somebody who thinks ahead? Because I feel like we haven't had that. They're just like, yeah, that seems like a good movie. And then like 3 years down the line, they're like, what if we would have connected it to this movie that we did a while ago, and we just connect it now and pretend like it should have all been connected the whole time. So somebody who thinks ahead strategically about this is how this is going to operate here and create a plan. And I think if you know the comics before one is just brought up to you, some of those niche comics are brought up to you, you can plan it out a little bit better and have something ready. And then find some of those actors that are less known and stop competing with Marvel. I feel like I know fans pit them against each other, but I also feel like Warner Brothers, their DC content has tried to either be super opposite of Marvel or have a likeness to Marvel because they're just trying to win rather than make good content.
They were. I think they stopped that. I mean, it really feels like that's why I think they're getting away from Zack Snyder's visions, is because they're going a different route. They're going more, each movie's kind of its own thing. They're not connected at all anymore. I mean, really. They don't even have, there's any teasers, it has to do with the movie that they're talking about. So they're very, very rarely connected anymore. It's not really a universe so much.
But even if they do this, do you think that fans can overcome their biases and preconceived notions? Like, everybody is already on a side and they've already established, I don't like DC films, or I only like Marvel films, or, you know, something like that. Do you think people can actually move past that slump?
No, because the internet won't let it happen like that.
They just want to fight.
Yeah.
They just want to fight. If you were able to actually measure the voices who spoke out against the DC movies, which seems so loud and so ridiculous, if you're ever like to quantify the number of people who actually did it, it's probably much smaller than the people who actually enjoyed those movies. Mm. And the same thing with Marvel. Like, if you talked about the people who tried to squash the Marvel movies, you know it's a small number because, well, I mean, there's a lot of people who like both movies. So you get to a point where you have super fans. Look at Apple. Apple is a good example of people who are mindlessly in love with something that polices absolutely every single movement of theirs so that they can't do a lot of changes to a device. And yet, if you try to tell them, you know, the Samsung phone is pretty great, you are a heathen for even mentioning that to me.
Ew, you like Android?
look at my phone. It is so cute.
Apple Pay?
I want to punch.
Oh my god!
Both of you like you're Chris Rock right now. I really just.
I do have an iPhone now though, and I do like it.
Do you love it? But you get what he's saying, right? It works because it makes sure you can't do anything stupid to it. That's really
right.
Well, I mean. It is much more like an Android now than it ever used to be,
because they're taking all the good ideas from Androids.
They are.
And I'm not an Android fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an Android fan. I'm not an Apple fan. I used to love my Windows phone, but they don't make that goddamn thing anymore. And even the new one that they made is an Android. So like, I used to have an Apple phone, and the thing that I hated about it was that I couldn't do whatever I wanted with it. And also, as soon as that 2-year mark hit, the phone went down the tubes so fast.
John, but you also like to push buttons.
Why are we talking about Apple phones? Who gives a shit?
This is smart TV. John needs to know this. You like to push buttons. I think it might be a good idea for Apple to prevent you from pushing buttons and doing stuff that messes stuff up.
That's a fair argument.
I like the push buttons.
Yeah. You'd totally be in the cockpit with Tom Cruise and push the eject button, and there goes Maverick.
no one needs Maverick that much.
The thing that people forget, though, is that Apple doesn't do phones. Apple does an ecosystem, and everything works inside the ecosystem. So once you're in the ecosystem, that's why you stay with what you know, because the ecosystem works.
You're buying the whole thing already,
and so now you're stuck. Right. It's like an abusive relationship that you just can't get out of.
Exactly.
You don't want to be there, really, but you don't have another option.
So Apple is... Which one's Johnny Depp? Which one's Amber Heard? Sorry. That's not cool.
They're both abusers.
Wow.
They're both Apple.
All I'm saying is that when I have the Kindle app on my iPhone and I need to search through a book to find a quote for my kid's homework, and I copy it on my phone and I paste it into Google Doc on my computer, and it just does it, it's amazing.
Copy and paste. Everything has copy and paste. Control V, man.
But you don't have Kindle.
I can do the exact same thing on every single device of mine.
Yes, everything. Literally everything.
But not when you have to have two devices.
Nah.
It's just easier. There's no Kindle app on the Mac.
Oh my god. I think you don't realize how not special that is. All right. So yeah.
You're the equivalent of Tom Cruise in his religion right now.
Why are you bringing Scientology into that? You leave Scientology alone. Let it defend itself.
Because he's just like so blinded.
I don't understand what you mean.
Yeah, you are definitely an Apple hooker. So I do want to mention before we segue that, and not because I care, because I don't, but Marvel did release the new Thor
trailer.
Trailer.
Yes! Yes.
And John, you're very excited. Well, apparently Troy was very excited. Please tell the world why you're excited.
The trailer was great. Like, the trailer was entertaining. Amanda, I don't think the movie's going to be any good, but the trailer was definitely entertaining.
The trailer was great. You know, if you ever feel lost, just look into the eyes of the people you love. It's just like, it's not you. Oh, I was just trying to pay attention.
So good.
Did you notice that he has the same color eyes now again?
Yes, I noticed that.
So I assume they gave him a new contact, or that it's just a continuity error, or what? Because he lost an eye and they gave him a fake eye that was a different color.
Yeah, I know. Maybe they'll put that as part of the story to kind of explain it away. Because they did like show it pretty prominently.
So you guys are fine with Thor being a boob, because they're just continuing the Ragnarok thing where Thor's like the dim bulb jock in the locker room at this point.
I am totally fine with that.
Yeah, because the one before comedy. Ragnarok was any good. So they just basically said, it's not good. Let's do something different. And Ragnarok was awesome.
But Thor's basically the joke.
Awesomely bad, but it was awesome because they knew exactly the movie they were trying to make.
Sure, but Thor is basically the joke of the movie now. I mean, don't get me wrong. Natalie Portman looks great. They show her as the new Thor, and I think she looks fantastic. Good for her. That's all that professional training paid off. But Thor, we know, is kind of a boob. Like, just a dim bulb. Still,
he's a boob in the very first Thor movie. Like when he loses his power.
The first movie is much more like the Thor of comics. He's the Thor of comics. It's like we can't even. I get people love Marvel, but it's like no one wants to acknowledge that if DC was doing this, they'd be raging against it. Against it. You're changing the character. That's not who Thor is. Why is he such a dim?
Because
dim?
That's how DC fans act.
That's all. Those are Marvel fans that act that. Towards DC. Yeah. Let's get that straight. But the reason why I dig Thor as a, you know, kind of a happy-go-lucky boob is because Chris Hemsworth does that so well. He does it so well. He does it so, like, the way he's playing the character, I appreciate and I love it. And I love how, like, he adds a layer. Because otherwise, in the first two movies of Thor, I really didn't give a crap who Thor was. It wasn't until Ragnarok, and it wasn't until like the preview for this, and even it wasn't until Endgame and the other one that I can't remember the name to, Infinity War, where he's acting like this boobish kind of character, or has the qualities of the boobish kind of character, that he adds a little bit more heart to the whole role and to the universe in general. He has so much heart. There's so much love there. There's a playfulness that Marvel really needs, or at least a bit of charm that Marvel really needs in this character, because otherwise no one cares about him.
He's Kevin from Ghostbusters, man. He's just...
I'm fine with that.
He's Thor. Why am I wearing glasses with no lenses? Because I'm an actor. That's what he's doing.
I think you're exaggerating just a little bit.
Total dim bulb. Now he really, really is. It's not.
He hooked
like,
up with the Guardians of the Galaxy, who are not exactly the brightest group in the bunch to begin with. It fits
right.
Who he's hanging out with?
Yeah,
he's like that before he hooked up with him. You know, when he was Fat Thor and he's playing video games and the whole ha ha.
He had
ha, ha,
5 years of depression. Give the guy a break.
Yeah, and they mocked it.
His friends disappeared.
They mocked it. He's basically the butt of all jokes now, and I just don't think that's Thor.
Look, if John disappeared for 5 years, you'd drink yourself into oblivion too.
I think I'd be all right.
No, he'd be pretty happy.
I'd be okay. I wouldn't be praying. Yeah. I wouldn't be happy.
Notice how Troy didn't say it was him. He's like, well, I sure as hell know that
Aaron would
care.
Be like biking and hiking and being like, God, I'm finally glad I've rid of that fucker.
Freedom!
That's funny. Okay, let's move on. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is might be out by the time you hear this, I'm not sure, but it has Nicolas Cage playing Nicolas Cage in the most Nicolas Cage way. It's also one of the most meta experiments since Deadpool or Being John Malkovich. So, simple question, how meta is too meta?
You can't be, because all those movies were great.
So you don't think talking to the camera, winking at the camera, winking at the audience can go too far, and making a movie about Nick Cage being Nick Cage, like, if they were to say, do another or something like this, where it's a different actor, same kind of you don't think it can go too far?
I mean, it could go too far. I mean, if it's Miles Teller being Miles Teller, we got a different story. But
it'd be the worst movie of all time. God, nobody wants to see that. That's like 2 hours of suckage.
This is the same thing with Love and Thunder, right? It's the movie they know they're trying to make. So if you already know it's the movie you're trying to make and you play into that and you ride into that, Nick Cage being Nick Cage, I didn't think this was going to work when I heard about it, but when I saw the trailer last weekend, I'm like, this is the greatest movie since The Rock. Like, I am all in for everything that this movie is about right now. And it's Pedro Pascal. So it's like, how could it be wrong? And Neil Patrick Harris is in it. I'm like, this can't go wrong.
Oh, it can. It just won't.
I think there's a place for extremely meta content to exist where it's fun, you know, like in this instance or with Deadpool, things like that, where it's sprinkled in our entertainment. But what I worry about is that it becomes the new theme for everything, where it's like, ah, ha, 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 we got you. Wink, wink, wink. We see you, audience. And that everything becomes meta. That's what I worry about, because they're going to see the success of Deadpool and they're going to see the success of The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And they're going to say, how do we replicate this?
If it's
because
successful.
Because it's all Hollywood does.
If it's successful. It has to be a big hit for that to happen, too.
Right. But I Nick Cage is probably the best person to start this off with, in my opinion.
Before it becomes a metaverse.
Yeah, because people enjoy the meta-ness of Nick Cage. People love Nick Cage being Nick Cagey. Like, that's been a thing for a very long time.
And people love when celebrities actually take the piss out of themselves, you know?
Yeah,
Which is always nice, especially a serious actor. Like,
And it will never get to that point because Facebook already stole the name Meta, so nobody wants to be associated with Zuck. So
nobody really cares about Facebook being called Meta. We still call it Facebook. It's it is so weird.
I mean, we still call it Google too, even though it's part of Alphabet. But
nobody knows that. Nobody knows that.
That's true. Okay. Nobody does know that.
Even Google says Google it. They don't say Alphabet it.
So. Meta movies have been around forever. It's been a thing.
Ferris Bueller did it.
Cabin in the Woods, Bowfinger. You got a whole lot of movies. Annie Hall's a very meta movie. It's not something that is any different than any other genre, if you want to call being meta a genre of movies. The only thing is that when it's good, it is amazing. And when it's bad, it is terrible. Yeah. And nobody will notice it when nobody will consider it being something that is meta if it's done badly. You know, you have the Scream, another great example of a meta movie, Spaceballs. You know, all you can do is probably find things that are a great example of what it is. If you go looking for this terrible stuff, you're looking at, well, even Sharknado is very meta in its own way, but it knows what it's making when it's making that sort of trash. Again, something that is on the cusp of being so bad, but it's good because they know exactly what they're doing. I'm not too concerned about it becoming a genre or too many people trying to do these sorts of things. Generally, meta movies have a higher level of comedy to them. And you know what? We're in a world right now where comedy is probably very important.
Hallelujah to that. Well, Jamie Dornan, he of 50 Shades of Grey and also Belfast, much better movie. He recently went on a tear when he said, prejudgment is such a effing disease. That's what he told Esquire about fan backlash to high-profile casting announcements. It's a disease in all of our culture. In my line of work, sure, but in general, people prejudge people based on anything, really, and it's very sad. Look at the reaction when Rob Pattinson got cast as Batman. It was like 90% negative. While, of course, I think everybody gets what he means, but is it or is it not, and this is a legitimate question, the entire point of fans to prejudge, as Jamie calls it. Isn't that also a symptom of adoration? Like, they seem to love that.
It is impossible for us as humans to not be judgmental in one way or another. We all have some sort of binary observation of something. Very rarely are we just neutral and in the middle and could care less, unless it's something that we don't care about. But when it comes to fans of movies, or people who watch movies in general, they're going to have an opinion. I think the difference is, and what's changed, is the way people talk about their opinions and the way people handle it, where it's not a matter of, it's gone from, I don't think you're right for the role, to, you know, harassing them as an individual because they've taken on a role. And that's where I feel like that's the problem. And I don't know that that was really emphasized in what he was saying, but that's what I feel about the judgment of actors and casting announcements and things. If somebody doesn't like someone in the role or they wish it were someone else, they're going to slam that individual and they're going to call them names or talk bad about their family or find something that they don't like to try to get them out. And that's the unfortunate status of society, of entitlement. And my opinion matters too much. You guys are nodding your heads. We're on a podcast.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yes. We are all very judgmental creatures. We are all very entitled in our lives these days. We all have these little devices that sit in our pockets that give us a world stage to be able to speak those terms out. What makes it worse is on top of the entitlement, on top of the accessibility to be able to put our word out there, but it's the tribalism that makes it really bad. When you have a group of people banding together over these negative thoughts about whatever it is, because they agree, and then they start using that as their strength to hammer away at some poor real person who all they did was accept a role or make a movie or some other thing like that. And that's where it really becomes problematic. It's the tribalism. It's the online attacks. It's the coordinated online attacks by many people, is where I think that we really start falling apart as people in general, because we don't consider that it's time to stop acting like we have a right to invade people's lives just because we don't agree with whatever it is they're doing.
To your point about tribalism and online slashing, it's also kind of the product of lack of research and knowledge, being super uneducated. People will see a take online and then they'll be like, oh, I completely agree with that now that I know this. But have you actually researched it to see if it's true, or have you watched their other films to see and make your own judgment for yourself? No, a lot of times it's like, oh, I saw that on TikTok or I saw that on Twitter or whatever. And because this person said it and then more people kind of clung onto that, I believe it too. And it's like, only until you actually do your own due diligence to form your own opinion do you realize, oh, that's only part of the story. That's only a little bit of
information. The thing that bugs me about all of this is the, I don't want to say audacity, because I do understand that, you know, it's probably not fair for an actor to be cast and to be just an influx of negativity to come their way. I get that. I mean, I don't think that's right. On the same token, you are making an absurd amount of money doing something that isn't really like a life-saving skill of any kind. So it's art. And the reason that you're making X amount of money is because of fans.
I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt your thought, yeah, but I have to. Okay. Did you just say it's not a life-saving skill? It's art?
Yeah. It's true.
I have two words for you, and the first letter is F.
I'm just saying. You said that with an artist on the line?
I'm just saying, like, you're not a doctor. You're not a nurse. You're not actively saving lives. You're creating art, and art is beneficial. I love art. Put a whole podcast together for it. So obviously I appreciate it. On the same token, you're acting like you don't deserve. He is speaking as in, I should not have to deal with that kind of scrutiny. Well, yes, you do. Because for two reasons. One, that's what is your livelihood. Fans and all that discourse, positive and negative, is what gives you an income. You know, you would be maybe working at plays or something else, but you wouldn't be fundamentally rich if it weren't for fan discourse. That positive, that negative is what gets people talking and gets your product in the people's view, and it gets people either excited or it turns them off. You know, it can go either way. But that discourse keeps a project alive. It keeps the conversation alive. It keeps interest alive. In this day and age,
it gets teeth added and removed.
Yes, very much so. I mean, that's just what it is. If you don't like it, enjoy, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's career, I guess, because that's where you're going to be if you don't have discourse of positive and negative. I mean, unfortunately, that's the world we live in, and that is fandom. People always love the adoration aspect, but they always want to complain about the negative aspects of fame. You've been seeking it. You wanted it. You wanted the high and everything else. This comes with it. That's part of the job, and I don't think it should ever be violent or sexual or anything threatening or anything like that. That should never be tolerated. But I don't think they're the right person for that role. Suck it up. Prejudgment is part of your job. That's how I feel about it.
Literally what I was going to say, like, I agree fundamentally, spiritually, ethically with everything John and Amanda said. but that doesn't make for a very good podcast when you don't have the counterpoint. So the counterpoint I have is that that's literally what we get paid for. They're called focus groups, yeah. Right? It's the marketing engine. It's what is supposed to be done to say, did this work or did this not work? And you're coming out of that focus group going, you know what? It didn't work. Like, go retool it.
And then I don't think any of us are saying that criticism or judgment is not okay. I think, and based on what he said, because he even says, like, in my line of work, sure. Yeah, like, he seemed to have accepted it. But
well, not really. What? He says that, but then he jumps to look at the reaction when Rob got cast as Batman. It was 90% negative. So he's saying it, but he's also.
But he also said it was same. Vile what was written. It was actually disturbing when you see the effing venomous anger that people have over casting decisions. And then guess what? Daniel Craig is effing brilliant and it changes the whole energy of Bond. All of the naysayers love what Rob has done with Batman. So and this is just my interpretation.
And that's what you
is,
do. Prove them wrong. Prove them wrong.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think when you're talking about the anger over it, and that's kind of what he was referencing is the anger. It's a matter of how you go about judgment. And in our current culture, judgment is very different than it used to be in a lot of ways. It's, and I don't want to use the term cancel culture, but even on casting decisions, it's like you can't make any announcement without some group of somebodies that John was talking about that get together and find something to try to destroy this person. That's the problem. The anger and the aggression. It's not like, man, I saw like real criticism. Like, I don't know. I saw his work and I just don't see how he would fill up the shoes of the Batman, you know, whatever, versus, you know, this guy is a P-U-S-S-Y. Is it still swearing if I spell it? I don't know how it works.
I can't spell, so it doesn't really matter. So
I can't spell.
And on the back of my mom's car either.
To these points, the other thing to come to try to measure, if you can even measure it, is just the amount of weight that comes at you, especially when it's negative, from the internet. You can't measure what people the amount of like mental anguish these people have to go through just to accept a role. The poor girl from Star Wars, not Daisy Ridley, even though she is one of them who actually had to get off the internet because of backlash from Star Wars, but the other girl, that she was just somebody who accepted a job and she was nobody until that she accepted this job, and then she became worse than nobody because she was in the movie and everyone hated her for it. So she's somebody else who had to get off the internet or get off to get away from all the negative press that she was getting.
Kelly Marie
to
Tran.
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Kelly.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So to the point of Robert Pattinson, this happened just last night. A buddy of mine sent me a text because on HBO Max, you can watch the new Batman movie. And he sends me a text saying, so the Batman movie's on HBO Max. And I go, yeah, it's pretty good, I hear. I haven't seen it yet. I'm putting it aside for this weekend to watch with my pop. He goes, okay, but it's Robert Pattinson, so it's going to suck. I'm like, why is it going to suck? Well, because he was in those vampire movies. Have you seen anything he's done since then? No, because he was in the vampire movies. I'm like, well, if you'd actually pay attention to what he's doing, he's actually not a bad actor.
He's a really good actor.
Is he Batfleck? Huh?
He's a really good actor, actually.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. Mm-hmm. Is he Batfleck? No. Would I rather see a Batfleck movie? Yes. But am I going to still watch this Batman movie? Yes, because the things that I've seen Robert Pattinson do since the Twilight movies, which is not his fault. He was just collecting a check.
But you still take that on. I mean, I do understand what your argument is, and I do thoroughly agree. It's vile. Disgusting comments are reprehensible. They're disgusting and they shouldn't be tolerated. On the same token, negative discourse, people that don't like the casting decision, I think are fair game. If people say, I don't like them, I don't want to see it because I think they suck, that's their right. I don't think that's vile. I think that's just somebody's opinion and it's fandom. They're entitled to their opinion. On the same token, what you guys are talking about how too much of the internet is vile and, you know, negative and everything else, I think people that try to shout down someone else's opinion is just as disgusting. And it happens just as frequently. Where if you have, take Thor. I said my opinion in a message group that I didn't care for the trailer. And that's all I said. I didn't say anything. I don't like the representation of Thor as a boob. And everybody's shouting at me, negative at me. It's all pretty, you know, attacking me. Why? It's my opinion. It's different than yours. why does it affect you in any way, shape, or form if I disagree? And so I feel like there needs to be a tolerance too, where you don't always get to be the king of the prom. You just don't. You're just going to have to accept that that happens when you take big choices like that. Now, Kelly Marie Tran, that's totally different. That was
racist.
That was racist. That's totally different. I don't like you in that part because you're the wrong person for that part. Fair game. And they just need to deal with it because that is part of the job, that you want it, that you accept it. That's how I see it.
I agree. Yes, to a point, I agree with you. But the problem I have with it is just the toxicity of it. Take it to James Gunn, for example, and Peacemaker. When it was announced that he was making the Peacemaker show, people tried to shut down James Gunn for this, and it was like, whoever asked for this, who needed this? But thank God James Gunn didn't care and moved on and just made the Peacemaker show he wanted to make, because that show was amazing. And I want to see more of it. And I, from the very beginning, I heard James Gunn, Peacemaker. I didn't give a damn about Peacemaker, but I know that James Gunn has made things that I've always enjoyed. And so I was ready to see whatever it was he was going to show me. And thank God he did it his way.
You know, something else that I want to say
about
all
of this. But he proved him wrong. He proved him
exactly.
Wrong. You didn't hear John exactly. Cena complaining about the negativity. He just went out there and did it.
Oh, no, he made fun of the negativity.
Yeah, there you go.
Something I do want to add to this conversation, though, is that just because it's commonplace for it to happen doesn't mean that it's acceptable for it to happen and that we should just be complacent with it. The toll that it's going to take on, even think about it from a local perspective, like somebody who is an elected official tries to do the right thing and they get slammed, their family gets slammed, all of those things just for trying to do a job to make money and also do something for other people. Regardless of what value we place art and entertainment in our world of working, it is something that
it's
at least for us four.
It's life-saving.
Let me finish talking. For us four, we could not live without.
Sure.
So it is of importance to us. And if we continue to let people treat other people like shit just because we're used to them doing that, we're going to start losing good talent from people who are like, my mental health matters more than this. Or we're going to continue to see celebrities die because they're like, I can't take this. This is a lot. I think we expect too much of celebrities just because they make a lot of money to accept things that none of us would ever accept or be okay with accepting in our jobs. And even from like a high level director position, no one should ever be verbally brutalized in any manner or receive only negative things.
We've all agreed about that. We've all said, yeah, that's wrong.
I don't think we should be like, that's the job, just accept it. My thing is, no, we shouldn't accept that.
So
we
they shouldn't say, if we don't think somebody's right for a part, we can't speak to it. We just shut up.
But that's not what people do.
But that's what I've said like at least three times. I agree, vile is wrong. All those kinds of things should be stopped and put an end to. But in terms of, I don't think so-and-so is the right person for the part, and here's why, you can call it negative if you want to, but that's just somebody's opinion. They should totally be entitled to that.
But most of those opinions come from just the internet being vile and one group starting
it.
Not
always. I see a lot of it. If I see it on both sides. I see if someone complains about Marvel and they don't say anything mean, they just say they don't like something, they get shouted out of existence. I see if someone says, I don't like this guy that's casting this part. They don't always, not every comment is negative. They just didn't like it.
And no, I'm just most saying, of what I see is I don't like it. Smaller amount of things. And it's,
I don't agree.
Even in the discourse, people are not kind to each other. I think overall, this is just, if we want to make it commonplace to put criticisms out there, then it should be for the right reasons. And we should also hold other people accountable. And I don't know, I get that that's part of it is us having our opinions on things. But I'm just trying to say that I support kind of what he's saying, and that a lot of these opinions don't come from any sort of educated place. Like, it's not like, to John's point, it's not like everybody who was like, screw Robert Pattinson, he's a crap actor, had seen anything but the one franchise that got him famous to really make a true judgment call.
But is an uninformed opinion not an opinion? It's still their opinion. I mean, it's not factual. They're not stating facts. It's an opinion. They can base it on whatever they want to base it on. I didn't see anything the guy ever did. I don't like him. He looks weird for the part. Yeah, I mean, that's their opinion. They're entitled to it. As long as nobody's insulting someone or threatening someone, I don't see a problem with someone's opinion. And I do feel like, just like we have to take it on the podcast, you just have to accept it. It's not everyone is going to be a fan of whatever you're doing. Okay, let's move on. I think we've all said our piece. Except for Troy. Troy's like, I don't care.
Troy's like, I'm out of this. He's over there smiling, texting, probably getting some nude pictures or something.
He gave us a thumbs up. Great work for a podcast. Thank you. Hey, remember, you can find our website at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can email us your criticism to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. And please support us on Patreon. That is P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, where we'll be putting up a bonus episode later this week. Now, we're going to move on to our topic this week, but we got to talk about Fantastic Beasts, The Secret of Dumbledore. Professor Albus Dumbledore knows the powerful dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald is moving to seize control of the wizarding world. What? Unable to stop him alone, he entrusts magic zoologist, I hope I said that right, Newt Scamander, to lead an intrepid team of wizards, witches, and one brave muggle, Baker, on a dangerous mission where they encounter old and new beasts and clash with Grindelwald's growing legion of followers. But with the stakes so high, how long can Dumbledore remain on the sidelines? Now, Amanda, I don't know if this could ever possibly be better than Fantastic Beasts 2, which is arguably the greatest film in cinema history, if I recall correctly. God.
No, I didn't give it a perfect 10.
You gave it a 9.5. You gave it a 9.5.
And I've regretted that since the week after I wrote it, and you won't let me amend it. Now it's held over my head, and it's haunted
me
every day.
Okay, very short answer. Now that you've seen this one, do you look back at what was the actual score you would give Fantastic Beasts 2? Now that you've actually, not just short version,
I was just going to say, I just actually rewatched it so I can give this a proper rating.
Okay.
I would give it 550, maybe 6.
Jesus. So what you're saying is we can't count on your reviews when they first come out. We got to revisit them about 4 or 5 years later.
That was a learning experience for me. I had fan goggles on and I don't even understand why. Like I've wanted to go back and reread that review, but I'm scared to because I'm so ashamed of myself. And I learned from it, though. I learned from my mistake.
All right. So here's my question, because here's what my problem was. I really, really enjoyed the first Fantastic Beasts. I thought it was a really great movie. Then the second one came along and I'm like, did they just forget that they were about Fantastic Beasts? I feel like it's all about Dumbledore now. Grindelwald. It's all about Grindelwald, really, and nothing to do with the Fantastic Beasts. So do they get back to that, or is this more just Dumbledore again? Dumbledore and Grindelwald.
I mean, it's more Dumbledore and Grindelwald and their history and rivalry, which is part of this franchise, this world. But the Fantastic Beasts do take a back seat to the rest of the story, which is really unfortunate, especially if that's really what you're into. They're more like there for aw moments.
Okay, so is Jude Law the star now, or is it Freddie Redmayne? I mean, that's where I'm confused, because it's Fantastic Beasts. Newt was the lead, but this is The Secrets of Dumbledore. It really feels like, is he in the back seat now?
It does kind of feel that way, and I'll be honest, for me personally, Jude Law, from the moment he has stepped into his role, has taken over the spotlight in this franchise, in this series. I think he just has a way of captivating us. And Eddie is he's very different. He's very unique. And we enjoy Newt and everything. But this, I feel like based on the title alone, you can't go into it and expect Newt to be the lead. Mm. It is The Secrets of Dumbledore. And I'll tell you, not much about it is secret. So I don't know really. I don't really know what we learned. But I guess we learned a secret.
Well, how was Mads Mikkelsen's taking over? Because for people that don't know, Johnny Depp stepped down and...
He didn't step down. Well, he was kicked out.
No, he did. He actually... He pulled himself out of it. They didn't actually fire him. Just, you know, behind the scenes. He agreed to step down for the sake of the film. So how was Mads Mikkelsen's taking over of Grindelwald?
You know, I have personal opinions on this, and setting that aside, I think that as much as I didn't want Johnny Depp to be replaced, I do think Mads Mikkelsen did a better job of giving us the Grindelwald that we needed, because part of this story has to rely on finding some sort of redemption in Grindelwald. We have to understand
why. Am I saying it wrong? It's not Grindelwald, it's Grindelwald.
That's how they say it. I don't know why they say it like that, but they say it like Grindelwald, like Volt, like we're French or something.
Or German.
But it's Grindelwald.
No, it's German. Oh, yeah. It's German.
I don't know
why you got French from that, but thank God you weren't in World War II, because you would have shot the wrong people.
I probably would have. But
no one cared about the French. You'd be all right.
Nobody cares about the French still. Anyway, apologies to any of our French listeners. Mm. But we needed somebody that could step into this role and could say, okay, I guess I can kind of understand why anybody would make a pact with him. Because we find out in the second movie that that's what happened. And so we have to have something in there that... Troy just messaged me, we needed, like we
stop
needed.
It. Why is Troy, if you're going to say the joke, say
why
the joke.
Why would you just say the joke?
Jesus.
I'm pretty sure something was in there.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, back to my thought. He did a really great job. He gave us the darkness mixed with, okay, I can see why somebody might have a little bit of compassion towards this individual, or could have in the past had compassion. Whereas Johnny Depp had such a unique flavor on the character that nobody could have seen any kind of likeness for him.
But he really did deliver then. I mean, Mads is a really good actor. So
incredibly talented.
And if you ever saw Hannibal, I mean, I was just excited to see him chew that up. But I honestly, because of Fantastic Beasts 2 and the kind of turn and how the beasts weren't really a big part of the story anymore, I haven't gone to see this one. And I've saw all of the Harry Potter ones, even though I don't like Harry Potter. I really like this series or the potential of it, but it just didn't work out. So do you want the story to continue, or is it time to move into other magical ideas?
Well, no, we need to. Yeah. Well, you had asked me this question separately in a message. You'd asked me, does this actually have an ending?
Because originally the idea was it's going to be 5 movies, and I don't think financially they're going to get to 5.
Yeah. Not after this opening. They'd have to have some positive momentum, and these reviews are not kind.
Right.
I would say that we go into this movie with one goal, and we end up coming out of the movie 2.5 hours later with the same goal.
So you don't really get a definitive answer then?
No, you get a definitive answer, but you're just going in a circle. Well, not really. You're just going in a circle.
Do you feel like if you go back and watch The Secret of you watch all 3 of these movies back to back, do you feel like you got a story? Like you don't need a 4th movie to really know anything? Or do you feel like
there's still a string that's loose that you would have thought would have been contained and completed in this movie but was not? But it does, there's a separate story that's occurring here. There's kind of 2 storylines that are occurring. One is the storyline between Dumbledore and Grindelwald and him being this escape artist or whatever. Kind of everybody's on the hunt for him. He's wanted. And then the other side of the story is this election. It's a political, it's got a lot of politics in it.
Oh my God, they went the George Lucas route? That's bad. That's bad.
They did. Yeah. They did, but it wasn't terrible. In terms of there's only probably one scene where I felt like, oh, we're really tapping into society here, like reality. But other than that, it was kind of, I don't know, subtle.
But it's time to move on. You're done with this series.
I didn't really want to see it, but I wanted to see it for the podcast.
All right. So $10 full price of admission. What do you give Fantastic Beasts 3?
I'll give this one $6.50. I liked it a lot more than the second one.
So the fan, well, that's funny since that was a 9.5. So I don't really know.
Shut the hell up. Not anymore.
This is an amazing, amazing movie.
You know what? I have editing abilities. I'm just going to edit that. I'm just going to delete the entire review.
Good luck. Good luck.
You know, that actually all works because technically Harry Potter and Star Wars are the same exact story. So it would make sense that they have an imperial Senate election in the third movie of the prequel. So this all tracks.
How are they the same story?
They're the same story. There's literally a comedy routine. I'll give it to you. You can put it in the show notes if you want.
It's really funny.
But there's literally the exact, like, Harry Potter falls in love with the girl who ends up being like his best friend. And then the brooding other guy like ends up getting the girl instead. It's like the exact same story.
Well, and also just like the child dynamic and the father figure who is really destructive to him.
A giant old man that basically knows the mystical arts that takes care of him and puts him on his journey. And well, then he has to fight this big...
Finally making Harry Potter a little cooler, I think.
Harry Potter is literally Star Wars. The same exact story.
Except...
Just magic instead of space.
Good. Except not good. In my
opinion. Wrong.
I know. Well, I guess I'm that negative internet out there. I just have an opinion. And I can't have that. Troy?
No,
you prejudge the comedy routine before you've even seen the comedy routine.
I'm going to watch it. I'm principal. Just not watch it. I try to be fair and give it everything it's due. Troy.
Yeah.
Any recommendations? Anything you've watched recently that you want to mention?
I am watching the fourth season of Maisel now that it is completely out and about. I'm thinking that it maybe has jumped the shark a little bit. I don't think it's got the same pizzazz as the first three seasons had.
That's too bad.
Might have jumped the shark.
I started watching The Outer Range. It's just dropped this last weekend on Amazon Video, Prime, or whatever it is you end up calling it. And I got to tell you that this is the most Troy show I've ever watched without Troy telling me to watch it.
What's it called?
Outer Range, stars Josh Brolin.
Adding it to the list.
It's like a rancher who runs into aliens or something, right? It's cowboys and aliens. Isn't it like the Daniel Craig movie?
No, it's not. That's what the trailer no, it's like. Not.
When he says Troy show, he means more like The Leftovers and Station 11.
Yes, as well as Leftovers, Lost.
How did I not heard this?
Yeah, it is. It is pretty. I watched both the episodes that are out, and both times I'm like, this is the weirdest shit, and I don't understand what the hell's going on. And then the last bit of the show, I'm like, I have to watch the next episode, and it happened both of the first two episodes. So you said are definitely
Prime or Paramount?
Prime. It's Prime.
Prime.
Outer Range.
Outer Range.
Duly noted.
Josh Brolin. It is the most Troy show that I've ever watched without you telling me to watch it. On top of that, it's what everybody else is watching. Moon Knight, love it. And Halo, I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah. They really don't have his helmet on a lot.
Yeah. It's
it's almost like, at this point, when you watch Halo, for people that don't know, in the video game Halo, Master Chief never takes his helmet off. Like, I don't think he's ever taken his helmet off that I can recall. And in the show, he literally rips it off in the first episode. And then all the time in the subsequent episodes. I'm at the point where I'm starting to think they're doing it as a middle finger to fans of the game at this point. Where they're just like, you.
It's very possible. Also, like, all these feelings that he's going through, that's another thing where I'm like, they're just messing with the fans, giving them feelings like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't like that. They don't want him to feel.
They don't want him to feel. Mm-hmm. He's too much of a badass to feel. What are you guys doing? But otherwise, like, I'm really enjoying it. But at the same time, if it fell off the face of the earth, I don't know if I'll miss it.
I really dig that show. So I dig it. Pablo Schreiber is a very good Master Chief, I think.
I think he's great.
Yeah. 1883. I'm watching that on Paramount Plus. It is a prequel to Yellowstone. It's been out for a while. I was waiting until the whole thing was done. It's a great Western, man. Sam Elliott is fantastic. It's basically the Oregon Trail, but it's got Tim McGraw and Faith Hill in it. And Tim McGraw is a badass shooter who's also kind of like, you know, a champion for his family. And he'll do anything to help other people as long as his family is not risked in any way. Like, he will not risk his family's life in any way, shape, or form, no matter who it's for. It's a really, really good show. I was so impressed with it. And Tim McGraw has just completely won me over, as I think should be just, I don't know. He should get his own Western series at this point. I want a spinoff. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, he's fantastic. He is badass, and I am shocked.
Me too. As soon as you said, and it stars, and it has Tim McGraw and Faith Hill, my face went, what?
Yeah, he's really good. Like, he's kind of a jackass, and he's very much like, he's just a father trying to raise his family and trying to keep people from doing stupid shit. But also, he's trying to help these settlers get to where he's going, you know, following the Oregon Trail to go from one side of the country to the other. And of course, they have to deal with all the things that actually came up in those times. So it's intense. Sam Elliott's really good too, but I you know, I really think Tim McGraw is the star of the show.
But we knew he would be good.
Yeah. I mean, he's just Sam Elliott.
Yeah. I watched Bridgerton seasons 1 and 2. I feel like somebody on here should be taking care of that.
I'm glad you took the hit.
I really liked it. I am not one for period pieces. I normally hate anything that this would normally be, but they kind of...
The sexy time won you over?
The sexy time, I thought it was going to be more sexy than it was, but I mean, it was all right. I've seen better. I've experienced better. I think you can just have your own memories and you'll be like, that's better than what I saw in here.
Jesus.
But I guess if you're feeling a little sexually...
What is happening?
Is sexually lonely, then
speak
it
for
might
yourself.
Help you or something.
I've never done it with a corset.
But I will say that a lot of the things that occur in period pieces where it's like, I can't stand these rules. I can't stand these concepts. And it's just all ridiculous. They're smart about subtly bringing that out and making note of it and being like, this is ridiculous, calling it out when it's stupid and ridiculous, and women trying to be stronger and like stand out for themselves and like, I don't need to marry this dude. And then there's other women that are like, yeah, I don't want to do anything. I just put a ring on this finger, man. And so I actually really enjoyed it.
Well, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. One thing I have a hard time with period pieces are, what, how do they pee in those dresses? I mean, really, it just boggles
Amen.
My mind. I have no idea.
Have you tried to pee with a romper? I can't even imagine trying to pee with a dress and a corset and all these other things that somebody had to help you put on. That's why
yes,
women go to the bathroom
Aaron
together.
Aaron has tried to pee with a romper on.
It was a bad weekend.
Yeah.
It's on video.
Also, like, guys don't really have to worry about that no matter what the...
It's true.
The thing is,
that's true.
We just weasel our way out. We go, you know, and then weasel back in.
Give
that's
us
it.
A big gulp cup. We'll figure it out.
Yep.
Sorry, I like that you notated bringing your junk out as weaseling it. Weasel on out, weasel on in.
I figured you'd enjoy that. I mean, it's painful towards men.
It makes it sound like those things are more attractive than they really are. Like they're cute or something.
We are moving on.
Weasels are cute. What?
Is a weasel the reference for the penis? Is that the medical term for penis now? Is that what I'm...
It's one of them.
You have to explain
them.
The joke, Aaron. It's
I'm
not
the
funny
weasel.
Anymore.
Nip in the juice.
Hey, buddy.
Every time I see Pauly Shore, I'm going to be like, that's what a penis looks like. All right, let's move on our from the outside in topic. Please, Scott. Revenge! With The Northman hitting theaters, yet another revenge thriller. We thought we'd actually discuss a little vengeance, and I don't mean the Batman. So why are we so obsessed with the concept of revenge, of going after those who wronged us or others to even the score?
The primary reason is because endorphins. Like, sometimes, especially because if you're like a normal, nice person, when you get this ability to like get back at somebody, it just raises the cortisol to a level that just makes you feel amazing, even though the act of it is not actually amazing, right? There's actually a whole scene in The Blacklist specifically where Red tells his nemesis
do you get
at
paid,
the time.
Hang on. Do you get paid every single time you mention The Blacklist?
No, but this...
Yes, he literally does.
Is there
does.
A tip jar somewhere that we're not aware of that somebody has to drop
yes,
a quarter
Yes, there literally
in?
Is.
Just asking for personal...
It only counts when I say, and you can hear the podcast on theblacklistexposed.com.
There you go. All right.
That was twice now.
Tell your Reddington story. Go ahead.
But it's he talks about like revenge is a disease, that if you live your life based on revenge, it's just going to eat at you and eat at you and eat at you. So I think it's the contradiction, counterposition. I don't know what the right word is, but it's the juxtaposition between the fact that it's bad for you, so if it's bad for you, you want it, right? Even though you absolutely do not want this to happen because it's going to kill you in the end, you just have to see the guy get sniped from the freaking building that you had nothing to do with, but maybe had paid the sniper to be there.
I feel that in my soul. I feel it.
Plus, Emily Van Camp is amazing in the show called Revenge.
Oh, Jesus. Like, that was such a reach. That was such a reach.
All right.
Oh, but if you see the show, you'd understand. The first three seasons of that show, freaking great.
I saw
like,
three
the
episodes.
Battle the battle between her and the nemesis and their back and forth in that show is just great stuff. Great stuff.
I look at it as though we've all been wronged. I mean, somebody hurt us. I mean, maybe you were a minor. Maybe it was minor. Maybe it was tragic. Maybe it was a big deal. And I think we would all love to wreck whomever did it. Whoever, you know, show us on the dial who hurt you, you know, that sort of thing. We just want to wreck somebody. There's always someone you want to wreck in the world. And even the nicest, kindest people have someone that they can't stand, that they loathe, that they think about. And when they watch these movies, trust me, they're thinking about that person. In fact, you listening, it's you. Somebody is thinking about you when they're watching those movies. It happens to everybody, right? Everybody has an enemy of sorts. And we just don't do it because we have good morals or laws or whatever keeps you within the lines. But these movies, these stories, these TV shows, whatever they are, they allow us to live vicariously through this idea that karma happens. Bad things will happen to people that do awful things, that it's going to come back around, because it doesn't really come back around in the real world, right?
No,
very rarely does it. People destroy our hearts and then just go on to do it to somebody else. And we're just sit there bitching about it and write on the internet, blog about it. Maybe that's about it. Make a podcast.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you said about living vicariously through it. And even if you are someone who has a very gentle heart and maybe you don't want to see someone destroyed because of their actions, like in your life, when you watch a movie and they really set the stage for why this person deserves it, and you really buy into that character feud and you're like, no, you deserve this. You don't even have to really resonate with the situation itself. It's just like, you go, girl. You do that thing.
Even better when you resonate with it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to subscribe to, in real life, I try not to subscribe to the idea that people deserve one thing or the other, or, you know, you just work for what you work for and you get what you get, and that's just about it. But in the movies, it's not about real life. And in movies, it is what everyone has said it is. It's living vicariously. We've all been that person that lives, that's felt powerless, felt unable to exert any sort of control in our lives because of one thing or another that either is a person or a set of circumstances. And that's what these movies do, is they give us the ability to at least be able to feel like we are exerting those energies that... or expelling those energies that we want to be able to expel out in the real world, even though the situation is nowhere near the same.
I also get, I think, a little bit of mental satisfaction, I guess, you know, because I know John and I watch a lot of true crime. I think Amanda does too. I don't think Troy does as much.
Hell no. I live enough.
But I know John and I do a lot, like probably more than is.
Troy's like, I live in the hood, yo.
Yeah, in the suburbs of Chicago.
I was riding my bicycle, my $2,000 bicycle down the street, and this kid was looking at me funny. Yeah, that's what Troy's
like. He put a stick on the ground and tripped me. I cannot believe it.
It was $17.50 for the record.
Like Big Daddy.
I was just guessing.
Yeah.
I hope somebody does that. Now I hope Big Daddy shows up with Troy's bike route. No, I think, you know, when you watch all those...
You want to see revenge, go mess with my bike. I swear to God, I'll kill someone.
You have all these true crime stories that we've listened to and heard, all these horrible things that have happened. And then you'll go and you'll watch a movie and you'll see similar things happen to characters in that movie. And so, you know, there's also like kind of a cathartic release, because even though it's fictional, it's like, I wish those people could have done that. I wish those people could have... made that happen to the person that did this to them. You know what I mean? So there's also that kind of play. Like, revenge really is just a fetish for getting it out there, getting it out in the world, and just being cathartic, I guess, and some mental exercise. Now, the bigger question is, what does this say as a society that we enjoy watching others get maimed and avenged rather than have their issues peaceably resolved or go to court and, you know, do jail time like so many people preach? Like, we probably preach in our free time.
I mean, I think it just means that we like to have a worthwhile story on screen. It'd be pretty damn boring if something happened and they were like, you killed my mom. And then they were like, well, can we talk about this, though? And they were like, All right, I guess so. Let's peacefully resolve this like normal people. No, we don't.
Yeah, see, I didn't actually kill your mom. Your mom was like just like for whatever reason lying down behind that car tire, and I just happened to back up over her because the camera wasn't working.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't me at all. It was the car. It was so let's street fight of this car.
Your mom was tired. Right. Really blame your mom for not doing enough exercise to keep her body energized. Like, she was just exhausted all the time. It's really on her.
And there goes another 5-minute movie. Thank you very much for showing up, everyone.
Right? Everything would turn up into shorts.
What a great
short.
It'd
be incredibly boring. We don't want that. We want to see also the potential of survival, because in Revenge, it's often people that are kind of an underdog that come up and you're like, they could very easily get hurt or killed. Are they going to make it? Are they going to survive? And then the journey of that, as well as I think we also enjoy, for some of us, the clever and unique traps or different things that can be done in some of the more violent ones, in the violent revenge films, where it's like, how creative can you really get?
I like the surprises. I like when Liam Neeson's just like throwing car batteries on a guy's knees. I'm just like, where did that come from? That's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I want to be shocked and surprised. That's what I want
to
be.
And especially when it's somebody who you can relate to, because maybe they're just a blue collar worker, or they, you know,
or you killed their dog.
Or you killed their dog. And you're like, if somebody killed my dog, I'd be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to see them take full vengeance in a way that, you know, in society you never could. You could never actually say out loud, yeah, I would cut their head off. Or, you know, if you're Johnny Depp and you make crude jokes about Amber Heard wanting her body to rot, her corpse to rot in a Honda Civic, it's not acceptable in society to say those things, so you can live vicariously through film.
That's actually a perfect example of why it's bad for you. Like, here's a poor guy who's probably been tortured by this chick, and we have proof that she's been torturing him for a while, and he's just like expressing his feelings because of like how much anguish he's living through, and all of a sudden like it's being used against him.
Yeah. Honestly, well, I'm not going to lie. There were parts that were funny.
I don't want to get into that story. What I find fascinating is we always want them to get away with it, right? We want the Avenger to get away with whatever they're doing. So, okay, the people that killed John Wick's dog have been dead for three movies now, right? I mean, they died at the first movie, at the very end. So all the other, like 57 other people that have had to die over this dog really is unjustifiable. And really, you know, I mean, the other people that were going after John Wick, they were just doing their job, and he just had to murder them too. So, I mean, you know, at some point we have to, like, at what point are we just okay with flat out, you know, mass murder because, you know, a puppy got killed?
Also, it doesn't make us a hypocrite if we're like, you can't commit murder. You killed mom. Again, we'll go back to mom. And then they're like, we are like, nah, it's fine if you just murder that person that murdered your mom because it's acceptable now. It's acceptable if it's revenge to commit murder,
eye
but
for an
not
eye.
Just, yeah.
Eye for an eye. Isn't that what it says in the Bible that everybody wants to quote? There you go. Boom. All right, let's talk about like the actual movies. So what are some of your favorite revenge movies? More importantly, why do you enjoy them? Which ones do you get into?
The ones that pop to mind right away are movies like MFA is one that pops to mind real quick.
God, hell yeah.
I love that movie.
I'm going to go for some of the ones that I found that are a little bit less, you know, unknown, because I feel like I want to give everybody else a room for all the John Wicks and whatnot. Another movie that's great is Revenge. It's a 2017
Well, explain why
movie.
You like these movies too. Like, why these movies?
Well, MFA, it's a, you know, I love it because, number one, I was an art student. I've seen this sort of thing happen in art school. I've, like, being around this sort of environment was something that I was very comfortable with. The idea of what happened to Francesca Eastwood's character is just a nightmare scenario that I, to me, and being able to watch her take control of her life again is just pretty rewarding as a person to sit down and watch. Mm-hmm. Another one that I think of is Revenge. Similar idea. If you don't know this one, it's an import movie. A woman is taken, and she's this man's mistress, and she gets taken.
Is this the Kevin Costner movie?
No. This is Coralie Fargit. I don't even know how to pronounce this.
I don't know this one. Go ahead.
This is Anna Ingrid Lutz is the star of it. And this guy takes his girlfriend to this retreat house that he has with his buddies. And one thing leads to another. And him and his buddies end up start to hunt this girl.
Oh, wow.
This is horrible. Yeah, it's pretty horrible. But she turns around and under like incredible circumstances turns around and starts hunting them back and ends up. You know, it's actually a really fantastic movie. Again, it's another one where someone who is reduced to being absolutely powerless in her life takes control of that power, grabs hold and runs with it and ends up surviving the day is one of the reasons why I love it so much.
One of my absolute favorite subgenres of film are female-led revenge films. Mm. I
pick two.
Thrive on them. I love them. My favorite one, and it is gritty and it is rough and I love it, and it's I Spit on Your Grave.
The new one, right? Not the old one.
Yeah. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Movies where Hard Candy, even. I know it's not her revenge that she's going for, but it's others. And I just love seeing a woman. Probably because I would enjoy being that woman too if I could, if society deemed it acceptable to.
Or legal. Say, not necessarily acceptable, just legal.
Just right? Legal. Yeah. If you hurt me or you hurt youth, you know, in the case of Hard Candy, you're preying on kids, I'm going to come back and I'm going to make your life a living hell to the point where you're going to regret me ever finding out that you are such a terrible human being. And I love those movies because it, again, is like living vicariously. I think if you are that awful of a person, even though it kind of combats my moral standings on the death penalty, it's just kind of like if you got that much evidence or it happened to you, I don't know, man. That's you shouldn't have chose that action then. It's on you.
Promising Young Woman.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great one. And even though I still, and I'm not going to spoil it because I really hope more people find that, but the end I still teeter with. I just feel like, I mean, I get the point.
Same.
But I still don't necessarily, I like it more after I sat on it, but I wish the ending would have went a different way.
You're talking about the ending?
The very end, yeah. The very end. Why that one for you?
I was just saying, I was adding it to Amanda's list. The strong female, you know.
Oh. Yeah.
You take out my friends, I take out you kind of thing.
Memento is another great one. Mm-hmm. I talked about Hard Candy already. The Crow.
One of the best of all time, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
I mean, yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Lee was so good in the movie. Just think if he would have lived. Now I'm saying it all.
That's such a dark thing to say.
Well, what I love about that one is like every kid, and granted, I'll be honest. I revenge thrillers are probably one of my favorite genres. Like just one of my favorite genres. I just love the idea of getting revenge on people that are jerks because you can't do it in the real world. So I want to live vicariously. And every kill in there is just kind of funny, kind of clever, and kind of fun. And, you know, I think that's great. I think they made it very, very soulful and mournful. And, you know, it's very heartfelt. And when he's doing it, on the same token, it's very cathartic because you really get that release because they also make it kind of fun. I mean, it's almost a little too fun the way that the characters are dispatched in that. And then they even added another bad guy that had nothing to do with it. That's a fantastic villain. So, I mean, it's like the perfect revenge movie. Good call.
I love that one so much just because the idea that, I would consider myself a pretty gentle person, and I'm gentle by design. I'm a big guy, and I don't like the idea of hurting people. But if you hurt the person that I love and adore on this planet, I am going to be your worst nightmare. And that movie is kind of like that, where, you know, the person that that the crow loves and adores is hurt by a group of monsters, and he becomes their worst nightmare. That right there is pretty cathartic for me.
Some great lines too. Victims, aren't we all?
Yes,
we are. Caw, caw, bang.
Caw, caw, bang. Fuck, I'm dead.
Fuck, I'm dead. Or fuck, I'm dead. It can go either way.
It's fuck, I'm dead.
You know what?
This whole section is just going to sound like bleep.
Go ahead, Amanda, continue.
Oh, I mean, the only other ones that I had are pretty obvious. Kill Bill and John Wick.
I mean, they're obvious, but that doesn't mean like they can't be mentioned. I feel like you guys are like, well, I'm going to pick some more complicated ones. That's great. But the ones that really stick, people that are resonating with people, are definitely Kill Bill, one of the best revenge thrillers ever made. That definitely deserves to be noted. Not only just because it's a great revenge thriller, it's two completely different kinds of films. Kill Bill Volume 1 is very much like a martial arts fantasy and everything. And Volume 2 is very much like a spaghetti western. That in itself
spaghetti?
Is brilliant. Yeah.
Spaghetti Western. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Spaghetti Western.
Italian Western.
I'm just hungry. Oh. I just ordered dinner. Did so I'm
steak?
Like...
No, I said mistake. I said mistake.
This podcast
can I get
saucy.
A1 with that, John?
Wow.
Oh, you freaking monster. And I bet you have to have it medium well
nope,
or well
medium.
Done, too.
That is
all right. I'll
steak.
Forgive you for that.
No. Psychological family drama. You know, John Wick was mentioned, obviously. Thinking like Cruella. The most recent one. Definitely a revenge movie.
I like that.
The Last Duel. Revenge in a completely different way. I thought was really, really interesting. I still say The Protégé is going to be in the next John Wick. There's like a crossover movie going to happen.
That's a good one.
Troy's like, I got 2021 movies for you. Get ready.
But one that I really enjoyed, surprisingly, was Peppermint. With Jennifer Garner.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You really like that one a lot?
Where, I mean,
that,
I
she disappears
enjoyed it.
For a while, she comes back, and she's, you know, Sydney Bristow.
Yeah, Jenny Garner, kick any ass, and I'm there. Electra was great, because she kicks ass.
Speaking of more recent...
Wait.
Did you
wait,
say Electra?
Thank you.
Did you say Electra was great?
Thank you. Man, I'm not cutting you off, that deserves to be addressed.
I'm out. Bye.
I tried to save you, Troy. Anyway... Speaking of these more recent revenge films, Unhinged, that one was a lot of fun and also was kind of like, I'm never, well, I said this at the time, I'm never going to be a jerk driver again, ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I was later.
Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, Crow? I have a feeling that you went back to being a jerk driver pretty soon after that.
You know what? I even honking at people, I have stopped doing that for a very long time because people carry guns in their car and they're not afraid to use them.
Yeah, that's a sad reality.
It is.
Yeah. I don't understand you people who get mad in the car like that.
Yeah, like, I'd kind of just relax. I just, it is what it is. That's why you give yourself plenty of time. Then you don't get mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron, you also drive under the speed limit.
I
you're
do
the
not.
Reason why people
it's
get
five
enraged.
Miles over the speed limit, like clockwork, always. No. So, always.
Well, if everyone was showing up on time, they wouldn't have to drive like a-holes.
Exactly.
Just
you
give
are
yourself
right.
plenty of time.
You and are if correct. You,
this is why self-driving cars will never happen, because nobody will ever leave at the time they're supposed to leave at. And no, people have to insist on taking control and being like, I can beat the computer to wherever I'm going to go by like taking these side streets.
And my favorite thing is people that don't budget their time well, they're running late and they're mad at the person that's just whatever they're doing. It's your fault.
Right.
You put yourself in that position. Stop being mad at
Talk
traffic.
About a vengeance movie.
Right?
This is what vengeance movie needs to be. Why are you yelling at me because you effed
yeah,
up, you son of a
make
bitch.
A movie.
What was that movie? It was Samuel L. Jackson and...
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, that's right. Changing Lanes.
Changing Lanes.
That's a good call.
Do we consider Gone Girl in this?
Yeah, it's a revenge movie, sure.
It's a revenge movie.
That's a revenge movie, yeah.
Because that one
basically
scares all of us.
Life at some point.
Yeah.
Somebody's dead that level of crazy.
Theoretically,
that's,
you have
that
to,
movie was my worst nightmare.
Yeah. Theoretically, you also have to include Ocean's 8 as a revenge movie.
and Ocean's 11, all the Ocean's movies, mm-hmm. or the first.
Well, I suppose Ocean's all. 11. Yeah, but I mean, really, that's the whole purpose of Ocean's 8 is the revenge plot.
Sure.
To get back.
Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's Glass.
That's like the
Glass
the first revenge movie.
Yeah, Glass would be one.
The Revenant.
Screw this bear.
You went back for the bear.
I want to make a rug out of you.
It's more like the bear screwed him.
Oh!
With his weasel? What? Did he have a pet weasel that helped him out with that?
Yes, he had that bear had a weasel.
Weasel. It's a good callback.
They were friends in the forest together first.
I think Taken is an obvious one, but I'm going to mention because nobody has mentioned it, and I don't understand because it's...
Well, we saved some for you.
I appreciate that. That's still, I just think, is a fantastic freaking revenge. Like the other two movies, well, Taken 3 is awful. Taken 2 is okay. It's actually pretty good. But Taken 1, one of the best revenge movies of all time.
Absolutely.
Just love how quick and crisp it moves. And I mean, apparently he's just picking up the phone and he already knows where to go. I mean, he's just like, oh, I hear the stoplight behind your head, you know, and whatever the hell he's figuring out in this. It's just insane. Great.
Doesn't he have to fly in that movie? Did he have TSA pre-check before it existed?
Yes.
Because, man, he got over there quick.
Gladiator, one of my favorite mm-hmm. revenge films of all time.
That's a great one.
That's the best Russell Crowe has ever been and probably ever will be.
Oh.
Oh, God. When he finally gets there and he comes face to face with Joaquin Phoenix and, you know, father of a murdered son, husband of a murdered wife, that whole, and I will get my vengeance in this life or the next. I mean, it's just, I felt like he literally could kill this man right then. I mean, that was one of the most intense performances I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, after that movie is when Russell Crowe basically said, I'm going to become like every other Australian old guy that's ever left us, the country has become, and like ate his own weight in
Jesus. Hamburgers. We're talking about a great that's movie. Can rude. We stay on topic? Mr.
Oh, sorry.
Just telling me how you're the nicest teddy bear ever and you're all for being positive and all that stuff and you just called him a chubby.
I think we forgot one of like the best revenge movies, which is A Time to Kill.
Oh, I'm glad they died and I hope they burn in hell. That one? That Time to
Right.
Die?
Mm-hmm.
Why
now
that
picture,
one?
Now picture she's... Yeah, like that closing lawyer speech from Matthew McConaughey in that movie, like mm-hmm. every single time.
Oh, yeah.
Gut-wrenching.
It's really, really, that's a horrible story, too. That's a great movie, too. Can you still watch it?
I
mean,
that's one I probably would qualify for Bad Movie Night, because it...
A Time to Kill?
Yeah.
What?
No, that's a great movie.
I know it's a great movie, but I think it's not exactly, like, high scoring.
Well, then those people are just wrong. I mean, I don't know, like, opinions are often...
Troy's just looking for an excuse to watch it again with us.
That's fine.
That's all it is.
If it's not a positive rating, then we'll watch it for sure.
It's a 68%.
Oof. What's the audience score?
85.
See?
Yeah, it doesn't qualify.
We could throw it in there if you really want to watch it, though. We can do whatever the hell we want.
68. I mean, it's just barely over fresh.
Go find some hot takes.
I mean, it does say over long and superficial as the critic take, so.
Yes, the critics' what? Consensus, overlong and superficial, A Time to Kill nonetheless succeeds on the strength of its skillful craftsmanship and top-notch performances.
Let me
it's
guess.
It's got quite a lot of good stuff in there, though.
The mullet population didn't like it. Is that what I'm getting?
I was going to say, when was this written?
Weird.
It was, what, 96?
Not the movie, the actual review.
Okay. Can I move back to the ones I was talking about? Thank you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Sleeping with the Enemy, you're going to mention that, right?
Never. No, Julia Roberts. Well, it's a good one, though. That's good.
It's a good one.
Yeah. And also Enough, which is a remake, basically, of Sleeping with the Enemy.
Yeah.
Same damn movie.
It's a Latino remake of it, you know? It's like, okay, Jenny from the Block's going to do it, okay?
You're lucky you have Hispanic blood, or I think you get canceled for that.
I don't think luck has anything to do with it.
I said blood?
Is the Prestige
blood?
On your
Latin
list?
Latin blood?
Because the Prestige would be a good one to add.
Ah.
If you like the Prestige. I'm not a fan of that one.
Oh, I
How
like
are you not
movie.
A fan of The Prestige?
I think it's kind of a gimmick. It's a cheap. I don't. It's a cheap ending. I think.
Really?
I don't know if that one actually counts.
I find that movie absolutely fascinating.
A lot of people do. A lot of people do. It's your opinion. It's wrong. Last House on the Left is probably one of my.
Oh yeah.
The original. I'm talking about Wes Craven, 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That is a visceral,
hard to watch,
violent, horrible story about. If you've never seen it, and a lot of people haven't because it's a very, very small independent movie, but parents are waiting for their daughter to come home. She hasn't come home, and her friend actually were attacked, raped, and murdered. And then the people who did it show up at the parents' house. And they start to put together that it was them. And man, the vengeance is palpable. And you feel it. You feel it in your... There's a remake, too, not too many years ago that was actually pretty good. So if you want to see something newer, you can. But this was just like really gritty filmmaking. Wes Craven at his most just, wow, guerrilla filmmaking at its best.
I cried and had to walk away before I could come back and finish the
movie.
That's
a hard movie to watch. It's a very, very hard. The Gift is one I want to mention. The Jason Bateman, Joel Edgerton, The Gift. That is a great revenge thriller. It's really, really well done and well orchestrated. And it does not go the way that you think. It's more of a psychological play, the entire movie. So I love that one. I also want to mention the original Cape Fear with Robert Mitchum is fantastic. Unfortunately, people will always reference Robert De Niro these days, but Robert Mitchum's original Cape Fear was way better, I think. And then you got Chuck Norris. One of my favorite ones is Chuck Norris and an eye for an eye. His partner's killed. And it's just basically Chuck Norris doing Chuck Norris kicks for about 2 hours. And it's fantastic. And it makes no sense because he should have been dead roughly 12 minutes in.
But it's not in the script.
Exactly. Wasn't in the script. He got to live. All right. Any other ones you want to mention before we move on? I do want to say Sue Johnson did mention... a couple listener ones that mentioned that we haven't talked about. Charles Bronson's Death Wish. I don't know how we haven't mentioned that one. One of the best of all time. Andreas, Payback, and Braveheart. So obviously he's a Mel Gibson fan. And Payback is a fantastic revenge. Braveheart's really good too. I'm not shortchanging Braveheart. Okay, so that's going to do it for this episode. We got one more thing. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can rate and subscribe us in your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta or Twitter at @RJohnDraws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirkin at Sink Into This. Troy at Troy Heinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed. Just ask him. He'll tell you he's on it. And me, I'm presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Now we're going to do a TV mashup, which is Amanda's going to tell us two existing TV shows that she thinks we could mash together and make one fantastic TV show that you guys would love to see. Dazzle us.
Okay, so this is kind of based on, had you guys seen Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies?
Yeah.
The movie? Mm-hmm. And you enjoyed it?
It's got Lily James in it, so yes.
Okay, so my thought is, because I recently watched Bridgerton, how fun would it be if we combine that with Ash versus Evil Dead? So we had like a zombie period piece where they're like trying to enjoy their love and romance, but then they keep getting these zombies that are in the way and they have to go and kill them. And the women are the murderers of the zombies. They're the ones who like protect the men or whatever. And that's how they determine who they're going to court and who they're going to try to win over is by who has the most survival skills against the zombies.
More notches on their belt.
Yeah.
Versus their headboard. That's the tagline for the actual show.
is there a component in where Bruce Campbell comes in and just spouts goofy lines and still is a badass about it?
I sure hope so.
Or maybe like instead of it being Bruce Campbell, the lead is Lucy Lawless or somebody like Ooh. That, where she comes in being a badass, but she has all these like badassy lines that don't make any sense, but still kind of work.
She's like the one who trains them.
I'm thinking that's how it's got to work.
I like that.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Is there still a lot of sex and nudity?
I sure hope so.
I'm in.
Maybe even the zombies get it on. We don't know.
I really think you should. I mean... Let's examine
this. Is this your penis?
Is this your weasel? We don't know.
I mean, what zombie doesn't like head? I'm just saying.
Wow.
My God. Oh, oh.
All right, everybody. It was a great show. Talk to you all later.
Oh, you people that turned off early. You dum-dums. Wow. Is there still gratuitous violence?
150%.
I am in. And now I really, really do hope that there's like a sex scene with a zombie, because I don't know if we've ever really seen that done well. And I think
it raises questions, literally.
Could you get it from, I mean, is that like an STD to turn into a zombie? That would be awkward.
Well, I just.
STZ?
A lot of things, but.
An STZ. But to that point, Troy, of raising things, I wonder, because they don't have blood in their bodies. So can a penis even get erect? So is it just like flaccid sex with zombies? How does it work?
If they eat a brain, I think it gets things going.
Hey, they don't call them stiffs for nothing.
He's got a point.
These are good jokes. These are really good.
I mean, if you really think about it, shouldn't they always be erect?
Yeah, maybe. I feel like it's a continuity error
that many filmmakers have been missing for many, many years. Rigor mortis is a real thing. Why is it not being addressed and undressed?
And undressed. Just hard nipples and penises everywhere.
What do you call this show, by the way?
Oh, I don't know. You didn't say I had to do that. Oh,
Bridgerton Z. Call it that, or I don't know, something catchy.
STZ. STZ. I liked that.
Done. I would watch a show. Basically, it's a TV adaptation of Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, but I like it. Yeah, I dig it. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for being here. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.